Tuesday night, it's 8 p.m. on the East Coast, and it's time once again for the Burn 'Em Down Podcast. This is week six in the Rolling Thunder Racing Series. The Burn 'Em Down Podcast is the official podcast of the Rolling Thunder Racing Series. My name's Greg Dreis. I'm your host, and I also do the Sim Racing Podcast as well as the Midwest Motorsports Podcast on Monday nights. Burn 'Em Down is a NASCAR series, Gen 4 cars. Sorry, I forgot what it was here. I'm so used to racing Gen 7s. Gen 4 series, and it's been a pretty exciting season so far. Up until this week, there were 5 weeks, 5 different winners, and this past week at Michigan, we had our first driver win his second race of the year. So as we start out, we got some guests here tonight. Both these drivers finished in the top 10 in Michigan. We have Ryan Johnson. He drives the car number 38. He finished in P7. And our other guest tonight is Lane Doyle. He drives car number 32, and he finished P9 in Michigan. Ryan and Lane, good evening. How you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Good. So we're talking a little bit before we went on online here tonight, and two of us are in the North Country, and the other one is kind of letting us know it's still 70 and 80 degrees down there in down in Houston, but you can keep the humidity. So Ryan, you finished P7 last night, or no, Sunday night. So was that where you expected to finish, and what was your strategy going into the race?
I need to work on strategy a lot better for the season. That's been like my Achilles heel. It's bitten me quite a few times, including Sunday. I don't know why the fuel calculations were so off, but after the caution, I was thinking we were still going to have to make, I think it was 4 pit stops.
Oh, wow.
So like, okay, the first one, I won't take tires and I'll just double stint these. And well, turns out everyone else took tires on each of the 3 pit stops and were able to make it to the end, which after that point I had figured it out.
Yeah.
And was able to kind of salvage 7th. I think I would have been up there mixing it up with everybody because I was up there after the first run. But it just screwed up on my part, but
well, you still ended up with a pretty strong finish at P7, and you're P10 in points so far for the year, so can't be making too many mistakes. Either that or you're a little too hard on yourself.
Probably both.
Okay.
Versus Ryan, he does both of those things a little bit.
Ah, okay. At least, you know, that's the one thing about you get racing guys talking, and if you know how each other's drive, you can't bull crap one another since you race together. Yeah, that sore thumb would stick out pretty far there. Lane, you finished P9. Were you happy with that finish last night, and what were your expectations going in?
This is an interesting season for me, this league especially, because this series is a lot more dependent on strategy than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying to narrow that down and get that nailed. It's the first week where it all went well for me, at least, so I managed to pull a top. Kind of pushed a bit harder on some of the early runs, but I'm still happy with the top 10.
I'm more of a casual driver. I've been on iRacing for about 7 years, and I've run a couple leagues, and I'm pretty much happy if I finish top 10. Like I tell everybody, you know, I usually finish mid-pack. If there's 30 cars in the race, I'll finish somewhere between P11 and 15, which is fine for me. And if I finish top 10, I'm certainly happy. And if I finish in the top 5, either I cheated or the scoring was wrong. So what were your expectations going into Michigan as far as where you wanted to qualify and tires and fuel strategy? What was more important?
For me, it was fuel strategy because I ran out of fuel on the last lap coming out of turn 4.
Oh, wow.
I began to stutter. Yeah. The way I was saving, I would have been fine, but I saw Daniel catching up to real quick, and I didn't want to be first car lap down, so I started pushing a bit more and luckily he crossed start finish line and I had to just enough to get back around the track, so almost ruined my entire race just for a little bonus for myself of being the first car on the lead lap. So a bit unnecessary, but hey, whatever. We go finish.
Okay. Ryan, is there any part of Michigan that you find more problematic or more challenging, whether it's finding pit road, getting off pit road, or any of the lines you run or turns?
In previous races, I've noticed that pit road is pretty difficult. I mean, it definitely helps the practice.
Yep.
So I think the previous races that I have ran there, even though it was legacy, it was still beneficial. As far as the track itself, the line that it seems to be popular there is, you know, just the lane up from the bottom.
Yep.
And turn two sticks out in my head, where you really got to pay attention to one and two, because if you screw up turn two, that wall pops out of nowhere and it hurts. It hurts your car, it hurts your self-esteem.
That it does. I usually have a bigger problem coming out of turn four. If you gas it up too fast coming out, I find it very easy to spin out on turn four for some reason. It doesn't seem like it should be that difficult, but turn four for me is always a problem at Michigan. Turn one and two, they have their issues, but I usually got to be careful coming out of turn four because I spin out for no reason quite a bit there.
I can see that. I did that when I was practicing.
Ah, okay.
But I feel like turn two to me is probably just a little bit worse.
Okay.
But I could definitely see what you're talking about.
Yep. And
yeah, I definitely feel like I struggle to pick up speed coming out of four sometimes.
Okay.
Like, I'm a little worried to spin it.
Yep. I found a little trick. I run SimHub overlays, and there's certain tracks, like usually shorter tracks like Martinsville or Bristol or Dover or Richmond. Show you what casual type driver I am. Sometimes I don't even know what turn I'm in on those short tracks because you got to pay so much attention to who's in front of you. So what I do when I practice is I've got a map of the track just above the black box on iRacing, and I start looking for practicing pit runs to come down pit road, and when I find a place that's good, I'll take a little piece of tape and put it right over the map on the track, so that way I don't have to worry about, you know, missing pit road altogether and taking somebody out if I miss it. So that's my cheat sheet, and I do that on just about all the tracks. It seems to help out quite a bit when you have trouble finding pit road, especially on a place like either Kentucky or Michigan. So that's my little trick.
Interesting.
You're really smart.
Well, you know,
I could see it at Bristol because I know I've done that a lot.
Yes.
Trying to figure out it, especially if it's single or dual pit roads, and then
yep.
like the front and back stretch are awfully similar to me.
Yes, they are.
Like Martinsville, I can kind of see, or I can normally tell the difference just because of the walls missing, you know, where pit road entrance is.
That's true, yeah. But like you said, Bristol, the front and back stretch are almost identical. I think they've got a lot of the same markings on whatever the shopping places they go down there. The supermarket, I think, or the signage on the front and back stretch are almost the same. So, Lane, you said you did some, I think it was Lane, you're the one in Wisconsin, correct?
That's right.
Yep. Okay. And you said you had some history with driving real cars. Tell me about that and how you got into it.
I race a four-cylinder, well, like we call them Bandits, Sport Compacts. I know there's a bunch of names for them, Hornets.
Just Stocks down here.
Yeah, there's a bunch of names for them. I started racing in 2019. At my local track, Wilmot Raceway. And how I got started in it was actually through a friend of mine. He, the entire year prior, we started to hang out and going like go-karting, like to K1. And there's another track up here called Sugar River where it's gas karts on a road course.
Oh,
and
cool.
started doing all that stuff. And, well, it turns out he was putting me through his own, like, little driving school, if you will.
Oh, no kidding.
And he asked me to run his car for the 2019 season. And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah.
That didn't take long to say yes to.
Yeah, I was like, dude, I'm not going to say no. Why would anybody?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I started 2019. I won the championship my first year.
Oh, that's cool.
And then, but the next 3 years, I finished second in points. And finally, this year, I won another championship in my own car.
Well, at least 20 to 22, you could blame it on COVID or something like that, or whatever the disease of the week was.
Right. There you go.
So is it dirt track or asphalt?
Dirt track.
Yeah. It just seems so much more natural for four cylinders to be on dirt instead of asphalt. Because we were talking earlier, we got a track out by us here called Lebanon Valley, and the corners are just as steep and high-banked as they are in Daytona. And you were talking, the four-cylinders, they just zip around there so fast. It just looks like it's so much fun. Did you do any racing before that, before the karts? Like when you were younger, did you do RC or other go-kart racing at all?
No, really nothing, aside from like the arcade-ish stuff.
Yeah.
That, you know, or what have you,
because, yep.
I mean, I've always enjoyed racing and always been into it, but no racing prior to that. It was just a drop in and go.
Something's working for you if you got a second for, what, 3 years and two championships? So it sounds like you've done pretty well in all five seasons so far.
Yeah, this year was kind of insane. We only ran, 10 races at my local track.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up winning five features.
Oh, wow.
It was kind of insane this year. And then not only that, we started running up at another track in northern Wisconsin called 141. And my first year going was last year, which it was a lot of fun. It was a lot different than Wilmot.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of experience last year because they run a two-day show Friday and Saturday.
Oh, wow. That's different.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun last year, and we're going again this year with my girlfriend and brother who also race, and I ended up winning the feature up there Saturday night. So,
wow, congratulations. When does the racing season in Wisconsin end? Because here it ended usually like the early September, actually. It's kind of surprising. They finish up like Labor Day or shortly after. So when does the season end out there?
For Wilmot, it has normally...
Okay.
Which I think it might be changing, going a little bit later.
Yeah.
Come next year. But it's around late September, early October, because I know 141 is kind of late September, and then if it's like an asphalt track, they can even go later if it's still, you know, decent weather out.
Yeah. Ryan, what's your racing history?
Do you mean Lane?
Lane, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I don't have any real-world racing experience other than my go-karts on a go-kart track, which I was addicted to growing up.
Oh, cool.
I had an opportunity because I had a cousin who raced Legends in Bandolero, and they offered to let me drive his Bandolero and move it up to Legends cars, but at the time I was like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So, I said I was too scared, and that decision haunts me to this day. I really want to hop into a car, but, well, if I could take 7-year-old me and shake some sense into him, I would, but it's a bit too late for that. I'll stick to iRacing for now. It's a bit cheaper.
Yes, it is.
At the wall.
Yep.
Amen.
Yeah, you said go-karts, they can be quite expensive. My son and I looked at getting into that, and even casually, it's a couple grand a summer to do it, and it's almost cheaper, and I think it is cheaper to run four cylinders than it is karts all season long. Because I know some guys up here that do whatever the circuit is around New York. There's 12 or 15 tracks involved between New York, Vermont, Connecticut, and talking to some of those guys, they're dumping $12,000-$15,000 a year into these things, so they take it pretty seriously, it sounds.
Oh yeah, no. Only go-karting I've done is like at my own house with a little cart, just driving in circles around my yard, like the go-kart tracks that have all the same cart, not my own cart.
Yeah.
That's been a blast, and
oh, it is fun.
That kept me busy the entire time up until I got into sim racing.
Yeah, I didn't do any racing whatsoever except for a couple times on a trip to Canton, Ohio every year for the Football Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. We had a lot of family out there, and we went down to Columbus and went on the Budweiser Brewery tour, and they were pretty strict. You can only have two per person, so my cousin and I, we went through three times, and then we're driving around, and we found a really nice asphalt go-kart track with gas-powered cars, and somehow we went in, and we bought the license and everything like that, and we managed to get around without crashing, so that was fun, but that's the only racing I've ever done, other than watching, I don't know if you guys... probably aging myself when I mentioned Wild World of Sports back in the 70s, and that's back in the day when if there was a NASCAR race on, it would either be highlights on Wide World of Sports or CBS would show just part of the race because nobody wanted to watch a three-hour race on TV back then. Then when my youngest two, my son and daughter, were like 10 and 9, they saw an ad for Lebanon Valley, and so we went over there for a bunch of summers. And then this iRacing thing comes along, so we got into that, and I've been doing iRacing for 7 years. I didn't know it, but I've been doing it for 9 years because my son, when he was 12, he borrowed my credit card because I guess you got to be 13 to be on iRacing. And the only way I knew there was iRacing was I get an email from iRacing that my account was suspended, and I asked Sam about it. He goes, oh, it was the last race of the season, and I ditched a guy because he was yelling at me for being a kid. I'm like, oh, thanks. So that's pretty much my racing history other than the electric cars at the malls, which are pretty nice. I work over at Lime Rock Park on some of the major events, three or four of those a year. That's just about an hour away. And there's a certain participation level in this club called the Right-Handers over there. And if you make 60% of the events and the time shift you work there, for those events, they gave us a couple weeks ago 4 hours on the autocross track, which was an asphalt 0.56 miles with about, it felt like 27 turns. And they had one of the Skip Barber racing cars, racing school cars for us to use. So everybody else that was in this group, I mean, they're real car guys. One guy shows up in a 2013 Corvette with 500 some odd pounds of torque feet at the rear wheels. I don't know anything what that is, but I know it sounds like a lot. He says, yeah, it's almost too much for the street. Another guy shows up with a 2019 Shelby Mustang. So I'm like, can I drive my truck? And he goes, what do you mean? I says, I haven't driven standard in 20 years, and we only got 4 hours, and I don't want to be out there stalling on the track, embarrassing myself. So I took my 2021 extended cab, 6 foot bed, four wheel drive Tacoma out there, and I got done. And the president of the club said, he goes, I was worried about it, but you actually did pretty well. And I'm thinking when my lease is up on my truck in the spring, trading it in on a Toyota, not the Supra, but the GR82 or something, and joining the autocross league over there next summer. It was a blast. So that's my experience with racing. And NASCAR experience, about 3 or 4 years ago, I got good enough to know in the Cup Series anyway, just about every driver and every car and every number. And then they had the silly season where they traded all around. And since then, I can only identify like, yeah, that's 19, that's Truex. And I get Bowman and somebody else mixed up, Allmendinger, and Al. There's so many names that are so close. So I'm just sitting there watching it, and now I know why my wife and a couple other girlfriends of hers, when they pick out their favorite cars, they pick them out because they're a pretty color, because it's so hard to keep up with them anymore.
Oh, yeah, the different sponsors.
Yes.
Every week.
Yep.
It definitely is. Yeah. Like, I haven't kept up on it. I mean, I know some here and there. I don't watch it like I used to.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when I was, oh, man, when I get my, when my dad got me into NASCAR, I think I was like 3 or 4. And I, at that point, I knew all the drivers,
oh,
their
wow.
numbers, their sponsors.
Yeah, see, because when you get Bowman and Byron, Allmendinger and Allgaier, and Chase this and Chase that, and a bunch of other ones that kind of, and, you know, then they cross over and they're racing Xfinity and Cup Series. I just said, you know what, I'm just going to watch the race. All I know is the cars go fast, and when IMSA's over at Lime Rock, you've got the GT3, the GT Daytonas. They brought back the prototypes this year, and then there's a couple other series. All right, it's a Lamborghini. It's going fast, and I love the smell of racing fuel. Okay, that's all I need.
There we go.
Yep. So you said you don't watch it as much as you used to. I have the guys that were on a couple weeks ago from either this series or Midwest. They said they still love racing, but they don't think it's the same. And what we boiled it down to, at least the three of the four of us that were talking about it, was there seems to be a changing of the guard. You know, Denny Hamlin's getting older. Harvick's done. Truex is getting up there. Kyle Busch is gone. I mean, he's still there. His brother is gone. Jimmy Johnson's gone. And kind of chalked it up to it's hard after you're 10 years, 15 years, like you said, you get into it when you're 3 and you're watching the same driver for 15 years and all of a sudden, you know, the young punks come in. You still like the race, but it's hard to root for a new fan. Any, you two find that to be the issue?
Yeah, well, my favorite drivers were Dale Earnhardt. Mm-hmm. And sort of Jeff Gordon when I was really little because I liked
yep.
colors. And then kind of transferred to Dale Jr. And then, I had so much going on for a while and I kind of got out of it and just, I never really got back into it. I watched some races here and there, like the Daytona 500 and like the Coke 600
sure.
and, you know, the bigger races like that. But I haven't found my new guy, you mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think that's an issue. What's your impression of the Gen 7 car?
I've enjoyed it so far. Definitely last season with the safety issues, there was some concern, but
yep.
it finally seems like the racing product on the larger ovals is finally back to decent levels.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Short tracks could definitely do some work. It seems like it's hard to pass there.
Yeah.
I don't like what iRacing style in the Gen 7. I haven't really enjoyed racing them. It just feels like after 10 or so laps, the tires are just ice.
Yeah. And it's kind of too easy to drive, which, I mean, it makes sense why it's the most popular car on iRacing, it seems, because there's, you know, all these COVID babies that came in and started racing then. I prefer, like, ARCA or the 87s, and they're just so much fun to drive because you're on edge the whole time. When the first time I drove nothing but Gen 7s for years, and then the Gen 6 before that. And when you go back on those older cars, it's when they say, you know, your grandpa's car was a boat, it was a boat. Because first time I got an ARCA, and I think it was racing at Michigan, and it was, you know, not used to driving them. And it was really hard to steer it through the turns. It kind of goes where it wants to go, kind of like a zero turn lawnmower. You can turn it in directions, but it's going to go where it wants to go. That's what I found out. But once you got used to them, they're so much fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the 87s, the 87 like winter iRacing series coming up.
Doing,
mm-hmm. Since NIS is over, they're pulling out the 87s and doing that series weekly. And I have a blast doing those long races in the 87s. You're driving a yacht.
Yes.
Basically, it's a blast.
Yeah. There was an over 50 league that I was in last summer, and one of the races was 87s at Watkins Glen, and it was, you get done with a race, it was like, I think, a 45-minute timed race, and you got done, you were exhausted, physically exhausted, because, again, fun to drive, but like you said, it's a land yacht, and it's going to go where it wants to go, and you try to change direction, and it's rather difficult, so.
Yeah, like, even at places like Daytona, handling and tire wear matters at Daytona and Talladega, which is not something that usually you think about.
Exactly, yep.
Like, getting side drafted or having someone too close behind you going into a corner,
yeah,
not even touching you at Daytona, and you go around on old tires. It's,
yep,
they're a blast.
Yeah, they are a lot of fun. I'm so glad they brought that back. I think they've been around for like 2 or 3 years now, and they were just so much fun. So, next race is at Rockingham. So, what are we looking forward to at Rockingham? I know we talked before we went on the air that both of you seem to really like that track as kind of like as difficult a track to drive on as driving a land yacht. So, what are your two strategies for Rockingham coming up this week?
I need to figure out tire wear, just so I know how long I can run on a set of tires and be competitive compared to a fuel run, because you have to save a set if the fuel run is so short. That's what screwed me over at Richmond. If you remember, I led some laps, but second one guy got past me. I was in 10th 3 laps later. So I just need to sit down and actually think of a strategy instead of just winging it. Come race day, and maybe I can actually finish the top 10 consistently. Be nice.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat.
Yeah.
My strategies haven't been very good. But I at least got some practice in, which I've been slacking pretty bad with practicing for this league this season. But I think I got tire wear at Rockingham figured out pretty well. It's a lot of patience and throttle control, and that place has so many bumps, but it's so much fun to race.
Yeah.
Me and Ryan, I think we used to run it in a team together, and we used to have mandatory practices every Sunday. And
I think
we were practicing for, we dominated pretty much every single week. Our team did, not just us two.
Yep.
But now that we don't have those mandatory practices, it's biting us in the butt that we don't do it ourselves.
There you go.
Ryan, we might need to think of something.
Yeah, definitely.
So, speaking of teams, I'm perusing the Discord page on Rolling Thunder, and there seems to be quite a few teams listed in the league there. You guys race in a team, and how important is it to have a team versus running solo in a race, especially a competitive series like this one?
I do. I run in After Dark Racing. It's me, Randy Nichols, Joshua Suss, and Luke Smith. I think it helps out a lot having, you know, multiple people coordinating a strategy, and we've even had it sometimes where somebody misses a race but they get home late, then they'll like hop on and start spotting for us,
or that's cool.
You know, helping us out this way or that way. I think it helps out overall.
Okay. The two or three other guys that are on your team are other drivers. Are the skill levels similar, and does that help, or if you have some...
Yeah, I think their skill levels are pretty similar. Like, we've all had really, really good, you know, battles and races, and we've all beaten each other in past leagues and races, and I think that helps out a lot, because we, you know, we can push each other to,
right,
you know, get better. I know Luke has told me time and time again, he's like, the only reason I keep coming back to, you know, it was a different league, it's because you're here and you make me push and make me get better. And
yeah,
I agree with that. Like, it, you know, you can't beat the best if, you know, you don't race the best and
that's
whatnot.
True. Yep. Lane, do you have any team you're driving with in this league?
So I'm not on a team, but I'm realizing that's been biting me in the butt because I'm in a league that we previously ran, but I'm running without a team, unlike what I used to do when I ran with a team of five. And I am struggling this season in that league.
Oh, okay.
So I'm realizing a team is very, very necessary, especially like what Ryan said. You push yourself to beat your teammates, not in a competitive, I have to prove I'm the best kind of way, but in a friendly competition kind of way. Like during the races, when me and Ryan were on a team, if we passed each other, we were laughing about it. Yeah. And it was great fun the entire race.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Second and third races?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the first three races, I finished first, then he finished first the next two, and I finished second to him both those times. In fact, I'm pretty sure most races he won, I finished second to him, which was just a little burning at some points, because I think at Phoenix, he passed you two to go.
And that one never
let that one go.
Oh, we're still talking about that. I'm just kidding.
We sure are.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, the reason I brought that up is I've always, for the last three or four seasons, have been on a team, and I'm trying to put one together for the Midwest Motorsports League, but everybody just seems to just want to run solo. I do have one part-time driver on the team. He's their Xfinity defending champion, and he said he can only make like four or five races. So we'll see how it goes, because running solo again, number one, it's lonely. There's nobody to talk to, but there's also no one to no one to look out and say, hey, car two's coming up on you really fast, or he's in your blind spot or whatever. Or the last team I had, we had two drivers that were spectacular that would be up front, and the rest of us would have qualified mid to the back of the pack and fight our ways up. And that was so much help, having people at the front of the pack and the middle of the pack. That way, it's almost like having a spotter up in the stands, because you pretty much knew what was going on, who's crashing and who's not, who's coming up. So, yeah, I miss that. So it's really an important aspect there.
Racing in leagues, I always had a team.
Yeah.
But after a while, I guess the young gun independent person in me decided, I'm tired of being told how to run a strategy, yada, yada. I decided to go independent. Worst mistake of my life. Give me back the team, please. Let me back in. I'm done.
Let me back in.
So how difficult do you think Rockingham's going to be? Because with this league, it seems pretty competitive with, I think we're six races, five different winners, and the races seem to be pretty clean. So if you get stuck in the back, it doesn't appear in this league that there's a lot of cautions to correct or make up for your mistakes, is there?
No, not really. If you make a mistake, it'll bite you. I know it's happened to me a couple times this season.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rockingham, personally, will be a lot of fun to me.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, you have to have a good night. You know, qualifying towards the front is going to help out. Not having to drive through the pack and figuring out and having a good strategy and sticking to it. Like figuring out tire wear, making sure, you know, you don't race somebody too hard too soon and eat up your tires. Because then, especially if it's early in a run, you're just going to be kicking yourself that whole run. Like, why didn't I just save my tires? Because this car is awful to drive now, or, you know, whatnot. I think it'll be tough. I mean, these guys are really good in this league. Yeah. There's a lot of competitors, and each week it seems like there's a couple new ones. Like, who do I gotta watch out for this week?
Yeah.
So I think it'll be fun, but interesting and tough at the same time.
Yeah. And
Rockingham punishes you for pushing every single lap. Like, you can get away with it at some tracks where you just kind of go every lap.
Yep.
Rockingham pulls you back down to reality and is like, hey, no. Now you're going to suffer because you decided to race for P15 really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to be 20 by the end of the run. So I'm excited for that. That's going to be the last strategy-wise.
Where do you think your best line is going to be? High, low, or in the middle?
What if 2 is usually pretty low, but 3 and 4, you can move around a bit.
Yeah, I used to think the bottom was, like, kind of it at that track. And then another league I run this season, somebody ran the top around pretty much the entire track. And
oh, wow.
I couldn't believe it because yeah. I stuck to the bottom for a while. And I was just falling back. Like, I was losing them. And I still have not figured that out. So I'm not sure which one is going to be best in this car because that was a different vehicle. But it's something that I'm going to have to practice and try to learn myself.
Yeah. How do you adjustments going into on your car, the limited ones you can do in a fixed series, such as brake bias, steering, and force feedback? Do you make any changes on those before you get to a track like this, or do you just race with what you feel comfortable with?
In the Gen 4s, it's basically the ARCA car on iRacing anyway.
Yeah.
I tend to run a looser wheel, like a higher steering ratio, because that's how I've been used to it. I tend to not mess with brake bias or force feedback much. Mm-hmm. I like kind of a low force feedback. I don't like the wheel fighting me too much.
Yeah.
Pretty rarely I mess with brake bias, but it's occasional. At Rockingham, I don't think I will, but that's just going off of like past races there. So still some tweaking left to be done in practice. Sure.
Got it.
Yeah. I always crank up the steering ratio to 16:1 just because that helps save tires.
Yeah.
And I know messing with the brake bias can, and I used to just drop it down in the trucks all the time, but I haven't really been messing with it too much in Gen 4, but I think that needs to change. I need to start tinkering again, see where I can end up.
Yeah, I only change it, like you said, when you mentioned trucks there, that brought back this one time when they did something with the trucks or the track or whatever, the time of day, I forget what it was, at Charlotte, because during the week I like to run the pickup cup series. I don't run any officials. I don't really have the time for it, but what's nice about carburetor cup and pickup cup, all right, you got a half hour to kill, go downstairs, jump on, and just something was off on the trucks. I usually do really well in trucks at Charlotte, and I just couldn't get through the turns. And then one of the guys I race with on a regular basis at that track, he says, well, change your brake bias a little bit. And as soon as I did that, it was right back to, you know, the way I used to drive. But I haven't found much of a difference on the cars, although I'm sure there is, just never paid attention to it. But trucks, it does make a big difference, is what I found.
And that's interesting, because even in a couple of other leagues I've ran in, like, whether they're my teammates or not, like, just other, like, friends that I run with, they, like, we'll talk, you know, after the race, would you run what for brake bias? And we'll have all over the board, and it's like,
yes,
we were all battling for, you know, same position. Like,
yeah.
You just throw a dart at a board, pick a number, that's how you...
Right, some cars, it's like, it's the world of difference, and others,
yeah.
or maybe it's the tracks, I'm not sure, but yeah, some are huge change, and some are no change at all, or
yeah,
it depends on how you drive, mostly, I'm assuming.
I'm sure that has a lot to do with it, but I found very little difference on the cars, full fuel load or partial fuel load, but I did find a difference on the trucks at that one track for some reason. It made me feel like a pit crew chief for the day, or crew chief for the day, because that's all I know what that stuff does. We talk sometimes about racing an open series, and somebody ever do that, and I says, I get on there usually when I buy something new, like a new piece of electronics or iRacing, and I find, oh, you can adjust everything on the car? I gotta figure out how to do it, right? Well, no, I'm in my early 60s, and my days of jumping into something right away and learning it right away, I'm kind of set in my ways. So I learned the hard way. So I just joke around. I said, yeah, you set the camber here, and it changes all this, and then sometimes the numbers change so fast when you're adjusting them, they get out of whack. I said, my luck is I'll change the camber on a right rear tire and the gas cap will pop off and I can't get it back on. So I leave it alone.
Yeah, that's exactly how it is for me. I'll change like the toe in, and then I look down and the left rear spring is up through the roof. Like,
yep.
What? Okay.
Yeah, it's like,
I know absolutely nothing about open setups, even though I've ran Road to Pro, I think, twice now.
Wow.
I don't know what I'm doing when I look at those numbers.
It's a lot of numbers, and apparently they do something, but I don't know what they do.
And what's funny is the descriptions on them. I mean, even the description for something as simple as the brake bias, which one gets, you know, the front or the back, it's okay, so you read what it does when you move it to the front, and then you move it to the back, and it kind of says the same thing, and like, well, maybe it doesn't do anything. But I got one of them so out of whack one time, I forget what it was. Like you said, it was a spring, a camber, a shock, or whatever, and it got something like totally unrelated to it as far as you would think. Common sense says that doesn't have anything to do with it. If we get it in the red, no matter what you do, you couldn't get it back. So that's why I'm so glad that there's setup shops and that I don't run open setups too much. Moving ahead through the season, Ryan, where do you hope to finish? I know both of you want to win the championship, but realistically, what's your goal and where do you think you'll end up?
I feel like I have top five speed at minimum. That's just personally, like, and based on performance, like I said, I've been up there. I haven't figured out strategy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I could get, top five in points, I think that I would consider that a successful season, especially with some of the guys that we got in here that I know are really, really good.
Yeah, I would consider finishing in top five in any league I do to be a big achievement. How about you, Lane?
Yeah, I'd say similar. I need to work on strategy, and once I can finally get that pinned, I can figure out where I am on speed, because I feel like I can keep up with the front pack. At Richmond, I started from the pits because I was distracted. For me,
you can tell he's the youngster on the show tonight, right?
What? No,
you definitely are.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. I'm 20 years old.
Oh, there you go.
I was running same lap times as the leader, who I think later went on to win the race. So I feel like I have the pace. I just need to be able to have the pace at the end of the race and keep up with them the entire time.
Okay.
And I think I can hopefully make a run of the top five as well, but I'm going to get all my eggs in one basket, get it all set and squared away.
Sounds good. Who's your favorite, what's your favorite series on? Okay, first of all, let's just jump back here for a second. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. How did you come across Rolling Thunder Racing Series?
I think we're both going to have a pretty similar answer to this.
Our team owner for the last league we ran was Justin Rideout, who I believe is the owner of this league. So that's
Is it Rideout? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I don't know. I've known this man for 2 years. I still can't pronounce that last name.
I'm kidding because I screwed that up, and that's what I called it originally.
Oh, yeah, that's funny because you look at the name and it's like, well, it's either something really simple like Rideout or it's something really fancy like Rideau. It's like the one driver, I was calling him Berube, and he was on a couple weeks ago. He goes, no, it's Berube. I'm like, thank you. Because
that's just like my Monday Night League. Another guy, his last name is G-E-B-E-L, and I've heard it Gebel. Gerbil, and it's actually pronounced Gable, and it's like you take your best guess, and you never know.
Yeah, he's got to put the little slash over the E.
In this league that have names like that, and I don't want to like talk to them, not because I don't want to interact with other people on the track, but it's just because I'm afraid to mess up your name.
That's funny.
I think the 17. William
Schwindenhammer.
Schwindenhammer, yeah.
I hope that's how you pronounce it.
I think it is. that's what I would go with.
Yeah. George Carlin's got a good one about that. He's talking about meeting people, and he says, some guy asks him, what's your last name? Trolensky. How do you spell it? And Carlin goes, S-M-I-T-H. The guy goes, what? He goes, never mind. All the letters are silent. So it's like the same type of thing.
I love George Carlin.
He was so funny. Oh, It's like my last name, it's pronounced Dreiss, and it the spelling is D-R-A-I-S-S. So it's been, we get the telemarketers calling and they go, Mr. Dross? And I said, you have one more chance to at least get it in the ballpark, because there is no way D-R-A-I-S-S is pronounced like D-R-A-W-S-E or something like that. And then she says, Mr. Dryass? I said, close enough. I have so many.
You said your last name, and then you start spelling. I'm like, okay, you're throwing a lot more vowels at me than I expected.
I remember, I forget if it was Pop Warner Football, Banquet Dinner, or Little League, or something like that. Someone got my name wrong, and on the trophy, and I got called up as Greg Dryass, D-R-I-A-S-S. And everybody was laughing. I was beat red. I was so embarrassed. I did not want to go get the trophy. Because, you know, you're like 14 years old, and there's the cheerleader that you think is real cute. You might want to take to the freshman dance next year, and then all of a sudden they call you dry ass. I'm like, oh, that sucks. But now it's a joke, and my kids got smart, and they go by the last name of Drace, and it's just so much easier because that's how it's spelled. But it's A-I-S-S, and the A is silent, and it's a long I. The prize money is what is amazing in this league. You guys can get paychecks every week if you finish up front. Was that a draw or a little bit of a hindrance when you saw what is a little higher entry fee than other leagues? But the payoff is definitely there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, another league did that, and I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
I see the benefit of it. I mean, you know, to try to keep people coming back, you know, the whole season. Because sure. It's like, even if, you know, you're out of the championship running or whatever, you could still, you know, make some money back or,
yeah.
You know, however you look at it. If you, you know, do it throughout the whole season, then you could make even still some money, you know, depending on where you finish. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, because I was looking at it and I'm like, oh, it's, what is it, 125 to enter or something like that? I go, okay, that's... Number one, it's smart because it's going to keep the riffraff out of the league or, you know, the bad drivers, because no one's going to come in that's a bad driver or that intentionally wrecks and you know, waste good beer money on it. And what I saw was the paychecks every week, the potential for that, it definitely is an incentive to keep people from coming back, especially a lot of the other leagues like the Gen 7s. When I was running Joe Sixpack Racing for four seasons, we had great turnouts at your mile and a halfs and super speedways. But the minute, even Watkins Glen, which everybody loved the track, the car count would go from 25 down to like 18. And then Martinsville and Bristol, you're lucky to get a dozen cars on the track. So the incentive is there. And from what I see, everything is well run. The races have been incredibly competitive, a lot of winners, and it sounds like it's a hell of a lot of fun being out there.
Yeah, it's been a ton of fun so far. Some of the best racing I've had. I mean, I look forward to Sunday nights.
Yeah. So yeah.
It's competitive out there, but not like overly so, where you have a group of like four guys out there every Sunday that just kind of lap the field.
Yep.
Even though these guys are light years faster than me currently, I still feel like if something goes wrong, I got a chance. I'm right there.
Yep. That sounds good. Well, I think we've covered all the bases here. Great conversation. We've been talking for the better part of close to 45, 50 minutes, and a lot of great information, good conversation, and... Ryan and Lane, want to thank you for volunteering to come on tonight. This has been a lot of fun. And like I said before we get on the air, you get some guys like to talk racing, and everybody likes to talk racing. It's not like a book club where people just sit there and wait for someone else to open their mouth. So definitely appreciate your participation, and thanks a lot for coming on the show tonight.
Of course. Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the invite.
Okay, and tell Justin thanks for putting this league on. I talked to him a couple times during the week and exchange information on Mondays and Tuesdays, getting the show ready. And guys, good luck at Rockingham this week, and good luck the rest of the season.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Have a good one, guys. Good night.
You too.
As the Burn 'Em Down podcast, our weekly driver spotlight special, Ryan Johnson, driver of car number 38. He finished P7 at Michigan, and he's currently 10th place in points. And Lane Doyle, driver car number 32, he finished P9 at Michigan, and he's currently in P15. Talking about their performance at Michigan, racing history, and looking forward to what's going on at Rockingham this winter. Speaking of Michigan, congratulations goes out to... That is the wrong one. Daniel Eberhardt III, driver of the car 90, congratulations goes out to him. He was the winner at Michigan this week, and he is the first double winner for the season. So he's the only one with two wins under his belt at this season. So congratulations to Daniel Eberhardt. The top 10 from Michigan, first place Daniel Eberhardt, car number 90. Pretty decent gap between first and second. He was 9/10 of a second ahead of second place finisher number 20, Colin Weatherholt. Third place, Dylan Jones, driver of car 3. Matthew Molnar finished P4 in car number 29. Scott Crump finished in P5 in car number 11. He was 10 seconds off the pace. Jared Mogard finished in 6th in car number 15. Ryan Johnson, driving the car 38, finished in P7. Michael Larch, driver of car number 2, finished in P8. P9 was Lane Doyle, and 12th place rounding out, number 12 rounding out the top 10, Jason D. Mains. Next race coming up this weekend is Rockingham. It's 167 laps in the Rolling Thunder Gen 4 Series, which will be broadcast on Global Sim Racing Channel, the official broadcast outfit for Rolling Thunder Racing Series. And I've listened to a couple of the race recaps there, and awesome job with the announcers there. Rockingham Raceway, it's a D-shaped oval, was opened in 1965. It's an ominous presence as you're driving down the highway in North Carolina, coming up on that thing, and when you're about 9-10 years old, driving by, and all of a sudden there's this monstrosity of a grandstand there, and just looking forward to driving past it every time on summer trips down south. Just over a mile long at 1.017 miles. Three turns of banking, pretty good banking, 22 and 25 degrees in the turns, and the straightaways are banked at 8 degrees. Record time at that track is 27.927 seconds, set by Jeff Burton, driving a Ford Taurus way back in 1999 in the NASCAR Cup Series. And after 6 weeks, like we said, we've had only one driver have two wins on the season, and he's also the points leader, Daniel Eberhardt III, with two wins with 196 points. He's got a 13-point lead over P2 driver Colin Weatherholt. And in third place is another driver with one win on the season, Dylan Jones. He's in third position with 180 points. Just 3 points behind him, another winner, Jared Mogard in P4 with 177. Scott Crump also has one win on the season, 177 points, followed by Jason Mains with 164. And right on his rear bumper is Seth Reed at 163. P8 is Matthew Robinson with 156. Michael Larch also has 156 points, and rounding out the top 10, Ryan Johnson, guest on the show tonight with 152 points. Pretty tight there, a couple positions there in the top 10. P11 is Randall Nichols with 150 points. Matthew Molnar with 145 points is in P12. P13 is owned by Luke Smith with 144 points. 14th position is Jordan Berbe with 137. 15th position, our other guest tonight, Lane Doyle, with 134 points. Not too far behind him in P16 is Jacob Manning with 130 points. Bo Tiffany, a past guest on the show, is P17 with 119 points. And right on his bumper, Drew Ballesteros with 118 points is in 18th position. Dean Gagliano with 114 points is in P19. And rounding out the top 20, Joshua Suss with 108 points. Further back, Brenton Barker, 103 points, is in P21. Trevor Williams in P22 with 96 points. William Schwendenhammer with 82 points is in 23rd position. Jared Haynes with 78 points is in 24th. Darwin Hansen, P25 with 62 points. Sean Corcoran with 51 points is in 26th position. John Ellis, 24 points, is in P27. And Jason Kelly, rounding out the points at P28 with 13. So the Burning Down podcast. This is the wrap-up for week 6. And every race is broadcast by the Global Sim Racing Channel. Want to let you know there'll be a special edition of the Sim Racing podcast hosted by me, Greg Dreis, on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. We're going to have Chris Mayo, owner of the BMRLE Racing Series, talking about a fundraising race, a charity race he has coming up on Saturday, December 9th for Toys for Tots. So if you're interested in getting into a fundraising race, $10 to get in. All proceeds go for Toys for Tots. Check us out this Saturday morning on the Sim Racing Podcast with Chris Mayo from BMRL Racing. The Burn 'Em Down Podcast with Greg Dreis is produced by the Sim Racing Podcast. Burn 'Em Down Podcast is the official podcast of the Rolling Thunder Racing Series. We are live right now on Twitch. The address is twitch.tv/Greg Dreis. You can also catch us on Spotify. We'll upload to YouTube as soon as we're done here, and you can also find us on all the major podcast platforms. YouTube is at the Sim Racing Podcast, Greg Dreis. Spotify is podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/Joe6PackRacing. We are also on Google, Amazon, TuneIn, and my understanding is early next year when Stitcher is finally fully absorbed into SiriusXM, a bunch of podcasts, including this one, will be available on SiriusXM. So, sounds like it means a lot, but it's just a talking point. So, until next Monday night, next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, have fun watching the races. Good luck to everybody at Rockingham this week. And until then, we will meet you on the track. Good night.